You're listening to the Locked On Nuggets podcast, your daily podcast on the Denver Nuggets. Now, here is your host from DenverStiffs.com, Adam Mades.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to the Locked On Nuggets podcast, part of the Locked On NBA Network. I'm your host, Adam Mades from DenverStiffs.com, the largest Denver Nuggets blog and community on the web. Check us out. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Today's episode of the show is going to be on the weekend games. Always get the games on the weekend. And then I'm always late to do the recap pod. Mostly this one will be on the Phoenix game. Not a whole lot to go over with that Houston game. They got their butts kicked. That's kind of those are my notes. I do want to talk at the end about matchups in the playoffs and who I think Denver has a puncher's chance against and who they don't have any chance against. But that'll be towards the end of the show. So if you're new to the show, welcome. Do these Monday through Friday. And after games, I always do a recap one. It's not really a straight recap where I talk about, you know, what happened in the game. It's more of a notebook. Maybe I should call these notebooks. It's just notes on what I'm seeing in the game and kind of some of my observations. So let's get into this Phoenix game. Denver flying into Phoenix on a back-to-back. Phoenix also missing Devin Booker and Tyson Chandler. They're number one and number two best players easily. I think Tyson Chandler in that home loss the Nuggets had a couple weeks ago. Really, their last loss before the start of this run that they're on was to Phoenix at home and arguably their worst or second worst loss of the year. Chandler dominated. I mean, he really dominated that game. And so his absence tonight, I thought, okay, Denver has an opportunity after that butt kicking in Houston to grab a win on the road, which they ultimately did, but it certainly did not go the way that I thought. My biggest note, I mean, we'll get started here. Denver had a hot start. They started out 7-0 on a 7-0 run. You thought, okay, maybe this is going to be a cupcake. You wanted a cupcake game, a nice little easy one for Denver. Then they come back home and rest. So they started off, but it was not to be an easy one. And there was some early drama. Will Barton, Troy Daniels get into a little kerfuffle. And this was like a real kerfuffle. This was not like I thought it was going to become – I thought it was going to get crazy. And it turns out – we didn't know this till after the game. And both guys kind of in each other's faces. I tweeted out. I was like, Barton's getting tossed. Something was said that set him off because usually he's kind of a – you know, shrug it off or whatever, but it looked like both guys were willing to get tossed in this game. That was my read on it. Those guys looked for real upset at each other. Turns out, and I didn't think of this at the time, Will Barton had kind of insulted the Phoenix Suns on the Road Trippin' podcast with RJ previously this week, just a couple days prior. He had said something to the effect of, you know, you lose as bad as they did. They had lost. They had gotten blown out by 50 points to the Spurs. He said something like, everybody's got to go down to the G League now after that happened. It was a throwaway comment. Will Barton, I think he keeps everything real. So I think he was just like kind of having some fun, nothing personal. But it was very personal to Troy Daniels and apparently to some other members of the Suns, and they were going to send a message to him early. And I got to say, I love Will Barton. I mean, he's honest to God one of my favorite basketball personalities ever to put on a Nuggets jersey, because after the game when he brought this up, his quote was so great about it. First of all, he said, you know, that's what it was about. They let me know something like after half or something like after I came back in from the tech, they let me know that's what it was all about. And his whole thing was, I totally respect them coming at me, which I think is just such a real quote. It was like, you know, that's what it was about. And when that happens, you know, they should take it personal. And he's like, I didn't mean it personal, but if some, you know, I respect them for taking it personal. And it was one of these like, Barton, I think, just doesn't have a filter. Like he's completely honest with it. He didn't mean disrespect to them. He was just making a joke. But if someone would have said that about him, he would have taken it personal too. So it was kind of this nice, I mean, just like completely honest response to it. And then the best part was he said, but if someone's going to come at me, it woke me up a little and got me going. And Will Barton had a great game. Him and Wilson Chandler, I thought, really carried the team in this game. And it's just kind of funny because it's one of those things with Will Barton where he's like, oh, crap, yeah, I was talking trash. They were right to take it personal, but I'm going to not let them kind of sun me. And so he responded in kind and had a great game. Just a cool moment. I honestly like these types of things about the NBA because it's as much as I am an X's and O's person and I'm not much of a big like intangibles, outside distractions, whatever theater of it all. This was a good theater. This was like a good little tidbit that kind of reminds you like, oh, these guys are people. They listen to each, you know, they know when they're being talked about. And it adds a little bit of chippiness that I think was fun. Anyway, back to the game. So the biggest storyline for me from an X's and O's standpoint was that Phoenix was switching screens, really switching everything with Jokic, and they were not afraid to let it. They didn't have a traditional center without Tyson Chandler in there. They had some tall guys, Bender, Chris, Chris with a little bit more bulk on him, but they didn't have like a traditional defensive center in there to really challenge Jokic. And I think what they decided was, you know, we're just going to punt on trying to like fight through screens and get mixed up with everything else. We're just going to switch, and we're going to, if Jokic gets a big mismatch inside, we're going to really help. But if not, let's see if he starts to kill us. And I think it's a smart strategy for a couple reasons. One, whenever a team does that, and just says, you know what, they've got a big guy, but we're just going to, you know, we're just going to play him small and switch or whatever. Teams, I think, in general, broadly speaking, are so eager to exploit the mismatch that sometimes they lose the rhythm of their offense. And I thought Denver did that tonight. Now, or in that game. Now, Denver scored 123 points. Their offensive rating was like 126 or something. So offense was not the issue. But here is one thing that I actually do believe. Denver had, they ended up with 20 assists thanks to Jokic's 7 assists, I think, in the final 5 minutes or 6 minutes. But they only had like, you know, 13 assists or 12 assists going into the fourth quarter. And they were scoring, but they were scoring a lot off of just mismatches, exploiting mismatches around the court. And when you do that, I think that it provides for a little bit of clunkiness. Now, Phoenix is so bad defensively that Denver was able to score anyway. But I do think there's at least this little bit that Denver got out of their own rhythm of this game. And it was a bit of a knock, I think, even on their confidence with that first unit. And so as a result, this was not a, you know, a couple games back, I think the title of the podcast episode was "This is Denver Nuggets Basketball." This game tonight, despite the fact that the offense was humming, was not Denver Nuggets basketball. It was a lot of hunting for switches, and it was a lot of post-ups. Jokic finished, I think, with 18 or 19 post-ups or post-touches. He averages about 6. So it was a lot of going to that well. And quite frankly, I don't think Jokic did a very good job with these mismatches. I've said for a long time, and people have debated me about how much does Jokic need to touch the ball in the post. I think like 10, 11, 10 post-ups maybe is like the right number for Jokic. So maybe a little bit more than what he has been getting, I think, you know, on season average. Although I'll bet if you look over the last 10 games, I don't have it off the top of my head, but I'll bet you his post touches are somewhere around 10. So I actually think they've been getting him in the post at a right amount for the last couple games, but on the season it's been fairly less, significantly less, I think somewhere around 6 or so. In this game, 20 or 19 or something like that, and I just don't think he did that great of a job. This was a game where I think he probably deserved that many post touches, but I thought Denver got just a little too deliberate in their approach with it. And what I mean is they would throw the ball inside, stand around and watch him, and you just kind of knew what was going on. And Jokic is a guy that I think is more so than most players a rhythm player. And when your action is deliberate, just go at this guy and beat him one-on-one, he can do it, although I just don't think he's at where most people think he is. So that's why when people say, oh, Jokic scores 1.07 points per post-up, a lot of times I say that's shot selection more than it is. Like if you gave him 25 post-ups a game, I think that number would come down a lot. And that's a little bit what we saw in this game. Jamal Murray and Gary Harris' defense tonight was really, really bad, as was Nikola Jokic, but I think it started with those two guys. And Gary Harris, you know, what's his name? Josh Jackson started out really, really hot in this game. I think he had like 10 points in 4 minutes or something. And a couple of those were just off of straight backdoor cuts where Gary Harris got caught watching the ball. And, I mean, kind of uncharacteristic for him. You know, he always, I think, has gotten distracted off ball, but it looks like really, really egregious in this one. And it set the tone, I thought. The Nuggets' opening quarter of basketball was just so lazy defensively. One of the stories with the Nuggets team, they're 7-10 in their last 10 games. I think their offense is looking as good as it has all season long, throwing out that Houston game. But every other game, I think their offense is looking as good as it has. But something feels off with this Nuggets team. And I don't know. I think part of it, quite frankly, I know I get in trouble a lot for this Malone bashing. I think some of it stems from his angstiness. And, you know, like his post-game comments, even after the Phoenix, Denver goes on the road, wins by 10 points on the second night of a back-to-back on the road. Now, it was against a crappy team that was missing two of their best players, but it was a double-digit win, and you wouldn't know it from the post-game comments. Malone seemed absolutely furious, and I think he had a lot of point, by the way. of being upset. This was a game that if I was coaching, I would be pretty furious too. But I do think there's something to just this like energy that is given off. Not, and I'm not putting this all on Malone. I think it's with the team in general. This energy, that it does not feel like the Nuggets are 7-10 in their last 10 games. It does not feel like they're maybe turning a corner offensively and figuring out who they are. And I think for this team, it's important for that. There's certain guys on the roster, Jamal Murray, Will Barton, Will Barton, Jamal Murray, who I think thrive off of just this intensity, like that negative energy gets them going. We know this from Will Barton. He gets punched in the face, he gets going. But I think for a lot of other players, you know, it's not that way. And I think there's just this weight on the Nuggets right now. At least this is my observation. I could be wrong about it. But it just seems like there's a bit more of a weight on the Nuggets right now than what should be for a team that has won 7 of their last 10 games. The other story, the big story of the night tonight, Devin Harris, who I guess we're going to have to start calling Darris, which I don't really love that name. We need like a nickname for, because since we have two Harrises, Gary Harris and Devin Harris. But Devin Harris, really, really solid game tonight, and plus 18 team high of all the Nuggets players, and just solid. I think you saw from him, he's not a flashy player. He's not going to fill up the box score and do all these crazy things. He's just solid. And he's another veteran, like smart player. He kind of reminds me of Jameer Nelson in a lot of ways without some of the things that I think drove people crazy. Jameer's, you know, heat checks after one make and some of those like the Jameer special, what people would call, where Jameer like would dribble it up and shoot and transition, that he did like once or twice a game. You know, Devin Harris, I think more within himself in all aspects of the game. His highs aren't as high, but his lows not as low. And you saw just how seamlessly he fit into both the bench unit and the starting unit. He got minutes with both of them. I thought a hilarious moment in the game was early when Devin Harris, like his first stint, he's playing with Darrell Arthur, and he threw a pick-and-roll lob to Darrell. And I'm sure it was one of those things where he's like, is Darrell an above-the-rim guy? I'm not sure. Anyway, he threw it up there. Darrell, I think he gets fouled on it. But it was one of those things that's like nobody else on the Nuggets roster is out here throwing alley-oops to Darrell Arthur. Also about Devin Harris, curiously enough, he draws fouls really, really well. And he had one. The reason I looked this up, I think on my last podcast, which was a really good one, if you haven't checked it out, I had Kirk Henderson of Mavs Moneyball. He alluded to it. And then Devin Harris did a good job of drawing a foul that made me look it up. He draws 4 per 100 possessions, which is more than Moutier, Murray, Barton, and Beasley. Surprisingly, Barton, who gets to the line a lot. Devin Harris draws fouls at a higher rate than all of those. I think that's such an underrated skill in basketball in general. Getting into the bonus, getting players in foul trouble, getting to the free throw line. Those three things are just so huge, all three of them. Elfrid Payton absolutely destroyed Jamal Murray in this game, and that was a huge disappointment. I don't know. Something might be up with Jamal Murray. He hasn't looked like his normal self, I don't think, over the last couple games. And I don't know if he's, you know, the Houston game is whatever. He's going up against Chris Paul, against a great team. You know, I don't really take any notes after that game. But in this one, I was really surprised how easily Elfrid Payton was able to beat him in the pick and roll. And of course, you know, in that third quarter, Michael Malone benched both Jamal Murray and Nikola Jokic. So I think he was really pissed with how that pick and roll defense was going for those two guys in particular. But Jamal Murray, I thought even more so than Jokic, just looked out of sorts, especially on the defensive end. Third quarter started out really bad for the Nuggets, as I alluded to. There was a fast break on great floor bounce. So usually when you see a team gives up like a wide open over the top outlet pass, it's because there was bad floor balance. Either somebody, you know, a guard took a shot and the other guard didn't get back, didn't realize or whatever. There was like Wilson was back, Jamal Murray was back, and somehow TJ Warren snuck behind both of them for a wide open easy layup. Malone like storms out on the court, just absolutely furious. Malone used up two timeouts in the first 2 minutes, and the second one was to get Jokic and Murray out of there. So he was clearly hot under the collar to start that third quarter. Actually, it was 3 minutes. So he benches those two, and you know what? It worked. The Nuggets went on a nice immediate run. Will Barton hit a big shot. I think Trey Lyles ended up playing center. Important note, Darrell Arthur hurt his wrist in the first half, and Malone went with Trey Lyles at center and not Kenneth Freed. He got off the bench at the very end of the game, but he did not play minutes. So something kind of to monitor. We know that – I mean, I just don't expect Kenneth Freed to play for the Nuggets. unless something crazy happens, I think he's just the last guy in the rotation. Now, Phoenix did provide a nice opportunity to go so small because, as I mentioned, no Tyson Chandler. Alex Len is terrible. So they just had – there was a lot of small ball in this game, and I thought Trey Lyles had a heck of a game. So, so you know, it worked for this one, but it wasn't it's at least noteworthy that Kenneth Fareed might be that buried on the bench. Part of why that lineup worked was because of Will Barton, who just went absolutely bonkers in this game in that third quarter. As he said, the kerfuffle kind of woke him up, and he ended up having a great game, but he in particular carried the Nuggets in that stretch. Third quarter, he had 16 points. 16! The Nuggets had 32, so he had half of the team's points in that one stretch, and more than half of his own points in that one stretch. So he was huge for the Nuggets. So I don't know. You know, Malone benching those two guys, clearly he was upset and trying to send a message. But as far as, like, did the change in lineup actually work? Possibly. They definitely played with more energy and effort, more focus and all of those things. But mostly Will Barton just started to go off. The run, and actually the third quarter was okay. It was the start of the fourth quarter that was really so good for the Nuggets. I mean, they kind of had some mini runs in that third quarter and played a little bit. They got low, then they caught back up, then they took a lead. But the big run was to open the same unit, but to open up that fourth quarter, and they just really opened things up. Phoenix bench tonight, I think, you know, we get so caught up in what the Nuggets did. A lot of times it's what other teams do, and when you're missing your two best players, that means two of your bench guys go into the starting lineup, and that means you have two fewer rotation players to actually get in. So Phoenix was playing some guys, quite frankly, I didn't even know, you know, a whole like Josh Gray, Devon Reed. You know, these aren't guys I really know a whole lot about. Devon Reed was a minus 23 in, what, 9 minutes? So as much as I think I'd like to credit and say, okay, the bench came in and just played great, and there's a lot of truth to that, it also should be noted that Phoenix's bench was absolutely garbage. Jokic came back in the 8 minute mark of the fourth quarter and played really well. I thought he had a great final 8 minutes. Seven assists, I think, in that stretch, made some buckets, made some big plays, hit a three, which was really big. But the story of the fourth quarter for me, you know, Will Barton was rolling in that third, and I think probably would have just kept rolling in the fourth. He had that look in his eye, but he rolled his ankle and clearly wasn't the same after that. The Nuggets needed someone to step back up. And what I love is, in this game, you had Devin Harris, old man Devin Harris, playing really well and being the steadying force. You have Will Barton, who's, you know, a veteran on this team, stepping up. Then you had Wilson Chandler. This was a game of vets. This was a game for the veterans. And Wilson, this was probably his best game of the year. I would say, no question about it, his best game of the year. 26 points, 3 rebounds, 3 assists, no turnovers, 11 of 15 shooting. And then that doesn't even really tell the story. The real story was what he did in the fourth quarter. 11 points in the fourth quarter on 4 of 6 shooting, 2 of 2 from the 3-point line. And his shots, man, so important. It wasn't just that he was hitting shots. He was hitting, you know, good in-rhythm shots. I don't think he had too many, like, really, really tough ones. But it was just clutch. He was willing to shoot. I thought he was very aggressive in the first half, getting to his spots, going one-on-one and exploiting mismatches. But then in that fourth quarter, he stepped to the plate and knocked down some big-time shots. And it was fun. It was great to watch. We've been waiting for, I think, Wilson to have a breakout game. You know, at the trade deadline, there was a lot of chatter. Will he get traded? He was on the, you know, we saw the Woj tweets that the team was shopping him. He stays, and he ends up having his best game of the year shortly after. I think, you know, Matt Moore had a great tweet about him, because I know these guys get a lot of heat from Nuggets fans, a lot of these players, like, oh, we want this guy off the team or whatever. It has to be noted that Wilson has had a down year. He was on the trade block in trade rumors, probably wanted to be traded. Doesn't get traded, and the Nuggets absolutely needed him in a crucial game that would have been a horrible loss. And probably, honestly, if the Nuggets lost this game, it probably would have erased a lot of the goodwill that they had built up leading into this game. And instead, he steps up and comes up with some of the most clutch baskets of the year. It's impressive. It's absolutely impressive. So whatever, you know, to the Wilson haters, say what you will about him. This was a big, I think, gut check moment for him. Phoenix only with 14 bench points, Denver with 28. That was your ball game more than anything else. And so, yeah, lackadaisical game, an ugly one, but I hope it is more of an anomaly. This team is not good on the road. They need to figure out how to be better and more consistent on the road. They really, I don't think with the effort they put forth, they would have won more than, you know, against maybe two or three teams in the NBA. You know, Phoenix, maybe Sacramento, they get a win with that effort. Not many teams. So luckily, it was Phoenix that they caught, and that was that. Lastly, the Houston game. Houston's just a horrible matchup for the Denver Nuggets. The Nuggets have a hard time, obviously, containing the spread pick and roll when you put shooters on the court. They also are very bad at containing the pick and pop. I think one of the reasons Dragan Bender had such a good game tonight is because the Nuggets are really bad at the pick and pop, and in particular Jokic. And, you know, so Bender gets a lot of, like, easy rhythm shots. We remember Kristaps had his 40-point game early this season almost exclusively on pick and pops for three. Denver just doesn't do a very good job collectively as a team guarding that, but Jokic in particular, I think, his biggest weakness. So that made me thinking, what would be how would I rank the teams that Denver would be best against in a playoff series? Because now, I mean, first of all, the playoffs are not a certain. Utah, I just put this out tonight. I think Utah is in the playoffs. I think they are one of the eight best teams, and I think they are so far ahead of the, you know, four or five teams fighting for those last spots that it just was a matter of them kind of figuring themselves out / getting healthy. Well, they're healthy now, and they're on a 9-game winning streak. When they entered six of those 9 games as underdogs, I think Utah is for real. Their front court of Favors and Gobert is like one of the best two-man pairings in the NBA. It has been actually even last year was just a defensive juggernaut. So now that those two guys are healthy, and obviously health injuries to any of these teams would wipe them out. Like, so there's no point in saying, you know, health is not, and health is for all these teams need good health. But if healthy, I think Utah, they have the easiest schedule of all the teams by far. I think they have like the second or third easiest schedule in the NBA from here on out. A ton of home games, not a lot on the road, and against mostly sub-500 teams. So I think Utah's in the playoffs. That means New Orleans, the Clippers, Denver, and who would be our other one? Oh, and Portland. You know, you could throw Oklahoma City in there, although I think they are clearly better than, you know, they're starting to look like their floor is higher than these other four teams. So two of those teams, Clippers, Nuggets, Portland, and the Pelicans are out. I think the Pelicans are the most likely to fall out. They've just been decimated by injuries, and I don't think Mirotić was like enough to get them over the hump. The other team is the Clippers, who I think all season long have been the team that just wasn't as good as the rest. They went on a nice streak in January to kind of make things interesting, but I suspect they'll fall out. After that, Portland and Denver, Oklahoma City. I think Denver, I can't say with too much confidence that Denver is better than Portland or more likely to go on a winning streak at the end of the season than Portland. So the margin for error, I worry, is very, very thin. But that being said, I think Denver, if they do make the playoffs, seeding also becomes interesting because Houston is the one team that I just don't think Denver can beat. I don't think there's a magic fix. I don't think Paul Millsap comes back and they're different. I think Portland is perfectly designed to beat Denver the way that they have beat them twice already, which is by 30-plus points in both games. I think if they got into a playoff series, it would be a sweep, and I think all four games would likely be fairly lopsided at the very least, if not maybe one competitive game. But I just don't think Denver – I think they are such a bad matchup. So maybe rank who does Denver most likely to beat. Now, it's almost impossible for them to be the one seed, almost impossible for them to be the two seed or the three seed. So it's really almost impossible for them to be the four seed, but I'm just going to put teams projected to be 4 through 8 in the playoffs. Who would they rather face? And I think, obviously, New Orleans, who's not really a playoff team, the Clippers, I think, closely behind them. those are the two teams that you look at and say, okay, Denver would absolutely beat them. After that, Minnesota, I think, would be I think Denver actually could beat Minnesota. I would give them like 60-40 odds if somehow they matched up in a playoff series. Portland after that, I think Denver can beat Portland. I don't think Portland is all that good. It would be a pressure-filled one, I think, with, you know, the Nurkic factor and then Damian Lillard. Just you get him in a playoff series, he can beat anybody. So it'd be a pressure one. I think after that, surprisingly enough, it'd probably be OKC. I think Denver is clearly underdogs in a series against OKC, but we've seen them beat them, and I think they just present an interesting matchup. Followed closely by the Spurs. Kawhi Leonard is not healthy, or if he's just not in rhythm, You know, maybe Denver could steal a game. We'll find out. I don't want to get too excited about that because Denver plays San Antonio here on Tuesday night. So we'll see just exactly how close they can hang with them. And then after that, you're talking about the hopeless ones. Golden State. I'd rather the Nuggets play Golden State. And then lastly, Houston. Houston is the one team. I would not joking. I'd rather I think the Nuggets have a better chance against the Spurs and Golden State than against the Houston Rockets. I think they have no chance of even stealing a game against Houston. And I think it would probably end in like blowouts where the Nuggets look completely outmatched and maybe like they don't belong. Thanks so much for tuning in, guys. Going to be back all week with a lot of episodes. Should be a good one.
Thanks for listening to the Locked On Nuggets podcast. Be sure to subscribe on iTunes and visit us on the web at denverstiffs.com.